Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
At least John Ireland and Mason are smart. You know, I didn't want to pull the athlete card, but there is some truth to that. I mean, it's not, and I don't mean to call no one regular, but George Sedano is regular, man. How are you going to be a regular person and compete with a pro athlete in any type of sport? You're a regular person for a reason, because you couldn't be a pro athlete. So it makes no sense when you start talking like that. I mean, like, he going to tire me out. I almost used a word that has an M in it and an F in the end. Okay? Like, how you going to – how you going – how
– Well, you bring up a good point, Keith.
Like, seriously.
When I saw you jump up onto the table a couple of years ago, but it was when I was first maybe it was right after I came to the show or right before, we were standing around talking in the control room, and you jumped up flat-footed and landed on the table. I'm like, oh, right, he can do stuff like that. That you just need to see something like that once in a while.
Bar counter height, okay? At a bar counter, just flat-footed, yes. Like you said. Didn't wobble, didn't hold on to it. No, boom. With no training, no, it doesn't. This is great bits. It's cool. I like it. It gets people talking. Our listeners want to see it, but it's not realistic, man. Dudes are regular for a reason.
Well, let me have you listen to this, Key, because George says he has a plan about where he's going to kick you.
And I may be able to catch him eventually with like a power sidekick or a roundhouse kick to the head and be able to kind of get away from him. Maybe some kicks to the legs to wear him down and just run around the ring and tire him out. But
so he's got a strategy, Key. He's got a game plan.
Yeah, and he may have some truth to that. I do not want to be kicked in my head by nobody, because I've seen them UFC dudes kick people in the head, and it does not look fun. But but he's got to get close enough, and his quickness ain't nowhere near my reaction. Trust me, my reflexes. I'm gonna grab that boy's leg and twist it off.
That sounds gross, Keith.
Wait, hold on. Jorge says that there's more. Jorge, go ahead.
Friend, I
am a third degree black belt in Japanese Goju-Ryu, Ariel Hawan.
What?
Yes.
Are you serious? Where has this been?
We have not discussed it. Yeah, it hasn't come up.
Wow. And you still practice?
I have not practiced in about a decade, but I feel like it's like riding a bike. You give me a couple weeks and I'm back.
I haven't practiced in a decade. That was real cute. Come on,
just
man.
Like you, Keith.
Look, at the end of the day, all that's cool, right? All that's cool until you actually got to use it and walk in that alley. You got all that, I'm going to get in my poles, hi-ya, and all that. Man, come on, man. Stop, man, until you actually got to get in that alley. And when you get in that alley, you forget all that. It's like you forgot all the stands the dude told you. Take your left leg and kind of lift it up. Take your right in wing style and then ha! No, man,
Keith,
come on, stop.
What you're talking about is a studio fighter, and that is 100% accurate. I know a couple guys who's a black belt, and whenever we had to go somewhere and fight, like, he'd get us to fight. You know what I mean? You could always do it in the studio.
you doing all that. I'm a third degree black belt. Okay. When I hit you with that right hand, let's see how that belt help you.
It just once you get your hands on him, you're what, 10 inches taller than he is? You've got a significant weight advantage.
Man, I've been body slammed him on his neck.
I don't think this is a fair fight, quite honestly.
I would go to
third
jail.
Third degree black belt or not.
I would go to jail for murder. Let's just put it that way. Because by the time I put my hands and I'm done with that dude, I'm not the type of person that I'm going to get into a fight, and I'm not all of a sudden. See, if I got into a fight, rage is going to come out. A lot of built-up frustration from the years of depression over time going to come out. So I'm just going to beat George like you see in that UFC stuff. I'm going to just beat him to blood, just be splashing all over the windows. I don't want to get into that confrontation with him. So George need to pipe down, man. Need to go on with that. I'm a third-degree black belt. That black belt ain't going to help him, Travis.
Well, if you're not going to train for your fight this weekend, what are you going to do this weekend?
I don't know, man. It's looking like it's going to be a gorgeous weekend. I have really no major plans. I mean, you know, every time you think about doing something, you turn on one of these news stations and they scare you into not doing it.
Rules change.
Yeah, everything is just, you know, the other day we're going to be locked down for 3 months, according to the guy, and then the day later, oh, no, that's not really going to happen. And then you say, well, maybe I'll go down Travis's way, but then I read something or hear something that people are, you know, falling out. I'm like, oh, no, man.
Are we not doing that anymore? I thought that maybe that we had something on the books. Is that dead?
No, yeah. You know what? I screwed up. I meant to say this. I called on Tuesday. It was all booked. And I meant to say it to you guys, but it just slipped my mind.
I was looking forward to getting into those old fashions
with you again. But we can. I'll do it today. I'll call back today and see if we can get it going next week. Because, you know, y'all going to eat up all the times real quick.
Well, I can't do it next week because Ireland and I are doing our annual challenge against each other on the golf course.
I'll get us on the books.
All right.
I'll get us on the books for one of these weekends. Let's just say that before summer really kicks off and you don't see me.
LZ, what about you?
Working.
Remember again? Go do something fun.
Working doing what, man? What you doing?
Well, I am hosting some Emmy coverage for the LA Times all weekend long. I've been studying the last 2 weeks.
Less than 10 people.
I just finished very, let's say, widespread piece on the Lakers, and so my brain's a little fried writing-wise, but I'm working. I just work. That's my life. I grind. I work.
Oh, I feel sorry for poor LZ. No.
As he sits
in that pretty pool,
this is how
playing that soft
pool
music.
And the music and the dartboard.
Man, I didn't say I worked in an office. I just said I worked.
As he walks around with them crunchy toes on his nice patio with the pool and the water flowing and the smell of grilling.
I just work. If you check my content, I just keep working no matter where I'm at, no matter what's going on. That's the way I've been wired, man.
Man, what are you guys hitting on LZ?
I was just talking to my kid yesterday, and I was like, I can't remember the last time I had one job. I was like, it might have been 15 years ago when I first started ESPN. I think I had one job. I was like, but that's just the way I'm wired. I'm not trying to say poor is me. I'm not trying to puff out my chest. I'm just wired to just work. I enjoy it.
I got to get a few rounds of golf under my belt because Ireland and I have our rematch coming up a week from Saturday out at Black Gold. You'll be able to follow it on social media. John's going to join us coming up here at 7:30 and we'll talk. But we're wagering our usual. Somebody's got to pull double duty. John either has to come in here and do this show and then his show, or I have to come in here and do my show and then fill in for him with Mason in the afternoon. That's the bet. You guys remember when John was winning with us last year?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you won. He had to do the show with me.
Yep, and we're going to make it 2-0. That's coming up on Saturday. All right, so we saw Blake Snell say yesterday that he doesn't want to play for a reduced salary because the risk's too high. We saw Bryce Harper come out and say yesterday that, yep, I agree with Blake Snell. I'm glad he said it. Somebody has to say it. Now, it does seem that there's going to be a negotiation coming up about the money, but it also does seem that the money is not going to be the reason that they don't play. There is a real expectation to get some Major League Baseball later this summer. And one of the things that it's going to have is it's going to have a DH in both teams. And not that the Dodgers didn't already have a massive advantage over the other teams in their division just because they're better, but I think that they're better set up to do this than almost any other team in baseball because they have so many different guys that can do so many different things. Their versatility, guys like Kike Hernandez and Muncy and Bellinger, all these guys that can move all over the field, they just drop one of those guys in the DH and they don't miss a beat.
Now, Travis, because of the pandemic and what we're going through, this has given Major League Baseball the opportunity to explore the DH scenario. Otherwise, we would have started the season. There wouldn't have been DH, right? We'd have just...
It would have been the same as it's always been.
It would have been the same as it's all. Now, or are they going to adopt this for the future, or is it just a one trial thing, or have they said?
Well, it's a one season thing right now, but you can rest assured that if it goes well, if the run production is up, if the pitchers in the National League and the Players Association doesn't have a problem, they've been talking about this for years and years and years.
Yes.
The brand of baseball, I think, and I think that baseball thinks, is better in the American League because of the designated hitter, because you do get more offense. We can argue about sacrificing and taking the pitcher out and moving a guy over with a bunt and all these things. Fact of the matter is people like to see runs, and there are more runs in the American League than there are in the National League. I think that this is the crack in the window that they need to run through and have it become a permanent thing, yes.
Now, who will the Dodgers DH be, or will we do it based on what our lineup is from a week to a game or a series to series type situation?
Oh, it'll be the second thing. Put it to you this way. There's not going to be a David Ortiz situation where this is our DH and he sits over there and he bats five times a night and that's it. Depending on who they're playing, depending on who the pitcher is, depending on what they've been doing in previous series, you know, look, it's half of a job, right?
But why couldn't
that if
why
you
couldn't
just need
it
a night off?
Why couldn't it be an Ortiz thing? It's just that's not baseball now or something?
Well, no, they don't have that guy. They don't have a guy that's just a designated hitter. They can't. With the Dodgers,
but you can make, we can make a guy a designated hitter.
But why would you want, Bikie, why would you want a guy that can do one thing when I can have a guy that can do multiple things?
No, I'm saying he can do multiple things, but because he's better at this than that, we probably become a stronger team by inserting him as that designated hitter, opposed to trying to insert him into the everyday lineup or whatever the case is where he could play in the field.
But think about it like this. Think about the Dodger lineup for the last few years. They don't have, with the exception of Corey Seager at shortstop and maybe Justin Turner at third base, they didn't have an everyday lineup. They moved everyone else all over the field. Jock Peterson would be in left field, he'd be in center field, right field, Bellinger all over, Muncy all over. They move guys. You got Chris Taylor moves all over. You had Austin Barnes who would catch and play the infield. You just had a million guys that could do a million different things. That's why they're better. Other teams don't have five, six guys that can play multiple positions. They might have one or two, but all of a sudden they're going to have to go find a guy that is just a DH. The Dodgers don't have to do that. They don't have to change their roster at all.
Man, they can go find. Go bring Manny Wood back. He want to play baseball.
I think he's still trying to play in Taiwan, right?
I wonder if he could be a DH at 50. But it certainly would be fun because you get to see runs. I love baseball. I love being out there watching it. But the one thing I hate about it will put me to sleep. And then you wind up just sitting there for 3 hours looking at one run game, two run game.
What do you mean it'll put you to sleep? You're sitting out in Dodger Stadium with your mouth hanging open? And just
man, it would.
Dead?
Unless you getting some alcohol with Raj. Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there bored out of your mind in them 2-0, 3-0 games.
You're going to have fewer of those with the DH. You're going to have more guys getting on base. You're going to have more guys scoring runs. LZ, I know you like the brand of National League Baseball. You're telling me you'd rather watch a sacrifice than a guy hit a home run?
Yes, I am.
Why? Because LZ wants to sit in the sun for three hours.
Because I'm just not a headlines-oriented guy. I also enjoy the nuance. I enjoy the fabric and the detail. I enjoy the wrinkles. I enjoy the gray.
I need the score to be 9-2 so I can leave at the top of the six.
I understand that home runs can register a certain response. I get that. I get that home runs register a certain response. It's a visual spectacle. It's amazing to see. It's great to be there when it happens. But it's also great when the unexpected happens. It's also great when the little details that you work hard on that you don't think ultimately is going to make a difference does make a difference. I love that aspect of sports. And so, yeah, home runs are cool, but I would much rather see, you know, somebody make a play at the plate. That's more exciting to me.
Right, Travis, though. You want to leave at the top of the 6-9-2. You don't want to sit through boring baseball.
I don't want a 9-2 game. What I want is like a 9-7 game. I want the game to be in balance. I don't want a runaway.
It could be 9-2. It could blow open in the fourth. Or the fifth, and then I'm out of there. It can stay close. And
you
then
want
blow
an hour-long baseball game. You,
yes.
You, I've got
get
you for
out
about
of the way.
Hour.
I'm leaving at the seventh inning stretch. I don't need to sit around and wait to see a dude slide at home and get him out.
We'll go to a few games, and I'll get you up to speed on why the late innings are actually the best innings. We'll do that. We'll put it on the books after we go to your club, and I drink all of your old fashions. That's on the books. All right. Todd Gurley is in Atlanta, and his coach says they got the right guy. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, happy Friday, everybody. Hope your weekend is getting off to a good start. Hope you got some fun stuff planned this weekend as well. We were talking yesterday with Sebastian Joseph Day and how guys are getting in on Zoom and they're learning new offenses and new things. Obviously, Todd Gurley is in a new spot. He's in Atlanta with the Falcons, and they haven't gotten a chance to see him in person yet, presumably. They've only got the chance to talk to him like everybody else. But according to their offensive coordinator, Dirk Koetter, they've got the right guy.
Oh, I thought you were getting ready to play sound.
So was I. So did I.
Come on, Jorge.
Do it again.
Jorge, get me my Dirk Koetter Atlanta sound here on Todd Gurley being ready to go this season.
He's only 25 years old, and he's had two seasons where he was arguably the best running back in football. So you're just talking about different degrees. I mean, this guy's got when he's at his best, he's got speed, he's got power, he can break tackles, he's elusive, he can catch the ball out of the backfield. So, you know, we've all seen it. We've all seen what he can do. And I mean, his accolades speak for themselves. You know, we just got to see how healthy he is and how consistently he can do it. He can still do it. It's just a matter of how often can he do it.
Are we going to have any idea on what he
see,
is?
I don't even like him, though.
Koetter or Gurley?
No, the Koetter, dude. I don't like him. You're an offensive coordinator, and you acting like you the head coach, talking like – I don't even like stuff like that, but I get it. At the end of the day, you don't know what Todd Gurley is. You hope that he's the same guy that you saw a year ago, 2 years ago, with the moments that you saw some things, some bursts, some pick, put your foot in the ground, stop on a dime, give some change direction, all of those sort of things. Off tackle, downhill plays, cut back, catching the ball out of the backfield. You'll be able to see that in the summertime. Right now, you don't know what you just paid for. You only could go off of the film.
Keen, let me throw this out there. That if Todd Gurley were still the best version of Todd Gurley, why would they have ever moved him? Don't they have to know something to have made that decision in the first place?
Well, it okay. Based on the Rams' behavior about getting him his money, and based on his responses to that, I am inclined to believe that there was something a little deeper and more sinister. Ooh, I sound like the ID network. In the relationship with the organization, meaning Les Snead and the coaching staff, that may be contributed to why he was being dealt with at the level that he was being dealt with at. Because when you don't do certain things a certain way with people that's no longer in the organization, that's because there's something there. It's almost like the Eric Dickerson situation. Why does ED continue to attack the Rams at every level? There's mm-hmm. something there that doesn't sit well with him. Why are you messing around with giving a kid his money in playing games, and why is he saying firing back on social media? Remember, I told you this a long time ago that the moment he's going to say something, he hasn't said anything, but he's alluding to issues based on his behavior of the social media, talking about his money and putting him on blast, and then them talking about we're going to pay him, our rights is to pay him when the contract says. That's bickering. So something is there where they didn't leave in part ways, as you are one of our all-time great running backs, and we're going. They didn't leave like that. So I'm inclined to believe that something more than his health contributed to him being in Atlanta.
I don't know. I don't know. You know what's going on in terms of the money. I don't know if it simply is procedural, and they're making sure that he get every last dime. I agree with the notion that, you know, he doesn't seem to have gotten the proper send off. If it was a money situation in terms of, you know, this is time to move on, I don't feel like it was a proper send off.
But see, but LZ, when a person parts with you and release you,
I tell them to get out. Get out of the house.
Well, when they release you and you've been one of the stand up guys and you're a good guy and everything, it's okay. They'll call, hey, man, we're going to wire that to you tomorrow. They're not going to play games with you. You understand what I'm saying? If there's a rift that's going on or was going on to some degree based on whatever it was, they ain't got nothing for you. They're going to do it on their time. I guarantee you when Jared Goff lead, they ain't gonna have a problem with Jared Goff. So they ain't gonna treat him like that.
Here's my question: is it really a procedural thing that once you get to step A with the physical with the Falcons, then the Rams are no longer financially obligated to compensate him as much money?
And it's that's true. As much we've already established that it's not 7.2, it's 5.5. We've already established that.
So why is it playing games if you're trying to save $2 million?
It ain't. That's what I'm saying.
So then it is a game.
That's what I'm saying. You playing a game. You gonna mess with me now? And you could feel instead of mess, you want to use some harsh words. You can use some. They got four letters that'll give you exactly what I'm saying. You want to do that to me now? Now you want to mess with me. Instead of cutting me, letting me sign with Atlanta, giving me the check so we both can move on, get out of our ways, you messing around. Talking about in the language in the contract, it says that we have to this date to do it. So you're going to wait to the last minute.
I'm really curious what the blowback will be. Let's play this scenario out. Let's say that Todd Gurley is in Atlanta and he's Todd Gurley, the very best version of Todd Gurley, and he's killing it down there, and the Rams struggle at that position, and the Rams are struggling as a team. And I mean, you talk about putting pressure on an organization right out of the chute. If that thing goes a certain way, that could be a tough, tough hurdle for them.
Yeah, usually when guys that got something left of the tank go to other teams, they usually show you something, whether it's a year, maybe 2 years, and you sit back and you go, damn, maybe we did it too early. Or maybe the relationship that we don't really know about warranted him to be moved to Atlanta.
His performance in Atlanta doesn't have anything to do with how they're going to feel. I mean, if he goes and tears it up, I would imagine you feel very differently all of a sudden.
Well, you might, but at the same time, you might have got tired of him side-eyeing you walking through the hallway. Or you might have got tired of him making comments. Or you might have got tired of him telling the trainers he can't stand you and the trainers running back snitching. These are the sort of things that go on inside the clubhouses. Guys will talk to the strength and conditioning coach while he lifting weights. I mean, I can't stand Sean Bevea, whoop, 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 and so and so and so. And I don't trust them and this, that, and the other. And then they go back because you know who to give it to because you know who the dude going to be that's going to run back and tell.
It's so different, though, if it's Todd Gurley. I mean, it's such a public person. It's such a public position that if you do this with a lineman or somebody else, somebody that's not – I mean, the quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers,
Let me tell you something, man.
It's so obvious.
Let me tell you something, Travis and LZ, who both have covered sports for a very long time. When you get multiple players – and multiple is more than one, I think, right? Is that correct?
Multiple ejections.
Sure.
When you get that talking – trash and firing at the organization, something ain't right. You ain't never known Clay Matthews to be a guy who on social media talking crazy. But when he came to the Rams and the Rams let him go, he started, you know, tweeting. You ain't never seen that happen with this dude in his career. He's always the Matthews family, football family. You ain't never on top of Todd Gurley. So it's like, what is that? What is that? And I don't know what Brandon Cooks might all of a sudden say.
The way you respond to it if you're the Rams is you just got to win, right? I mean, it's pretty simple. That even if Todd Gurley goes to Atlanta, even if Brandon Cooks is in Houston tearing it up, Brandon Cooks could have a monster year. But if the Rams go out and compete, win the NFC West, get in the playoffs as a wild card, whatever it might be. If the Rams have a good season,
can they get into the wild card with 6 wins? Because USA Today had them predicted in 6 wins.
Well, look, I'm just saying, going to have 6 wins. That doesn't mean anything.
All I'm saying is the people that put this stuff out there, whether it's Vegas, whether it's USA Today, they predicted them to win 6 games. Can you make it to the playoffs with 6 games? That's just a question I ask you.
Odds are low. Typically, 6-win teams do not get into the playoffs. But just because the USA Today says it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
There's some other people that says they're not going to make the playoffs either. But I get it. There's teams that we expect to be down that'll be up. I understand. And I like the Rams. I like their chances. But I don't know if I like their chances enough to put them ahead of Seattle or San Francisco.
No, that's a tougher putt for sure. All right, John Ireland will give us his take on Fight Island. He's going to join us next, coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
He will be here momentarily. We're having a little connectivity issue, but John will join us here in a minute. Can we just cut right to it real quick? There's nobody that actually thinks that George would beat Key in a fight, right? That nobody actually believes that. This is just a giant bit. The Key would kill him.
Raj thinks so.
No, he didn't. Raj, come on. There's no way. There's absolutely no way.
Well, I mean, look, at the end of the day, you never take your opponents lightly. You always respect your opponents. There's no question about that. But I can't for the life of me come up with a scenario that George Sedano would beat me in anything other than maybe chess or checkers. I mean,
you know. Are you not a good chess player, Keith?
When I was a kid, I was afraid to death of the little horses and all the little stuff. Yeah,
Oh my God. Elaborate, please. Let's hold on. I feel like we're this is like a psychiatric session. I feel
no,
like
I just didn't. I didn't like what they looked like. I mean, come on, LZ. We had the cheap
just a
checker.
Horse, Keith.
I mean, we had the cheap chess sets, and it was just the whole, you know, just the way that they look. Only time I would see that those looking things would be in some historical television show where, you know, you watching somebody, some kings and queens and all that. And so when I was a kid, I never looked. That sort of stuff scared me, man. The whole ancient history, like certain things I don't like.
Like the Middle Ages are not your thing. Want to go back.
Like I don't
know.
No, the Middle Ages back in time. Even when we went to the great place that hosted us out in
Medieval times.
It's cool because they did a good job at putting it on for us when we did it last summer. But I'm like, I did it as a team, but I just ain't really feeling. I ain't feeling the big swords and the horses running into me, jousting along and stabbing a guy. I'm like, nah.
No wonder you didn't like Game of Thrones. Now it's all starting to come together now.
I don't like stuff like that. That's just not. You know, you grow up a certain way and you're raised a certain way, and certain things you don't experience and you don't see, and the only thing you're taught is this. You know, it goes back to certain things in education, too. Growing up and being educated in the LA Unified School District, there's certain things that they teach you. Then when you get outside of that, you go, damn, I didn't even know that existed. It's the same thing. It's the same thing in this sort of stuff growing up. So, you know, you put a chess set in front of me as a kid. I'm like, nah. But you put checkers. Checkers was cool. You know, but
there was no rooks or knights or bishops. They're just little circles.
That's why they was cool.
You're okay with the Renaissance, Key? Are there any other historical periods that you're uncomfortable with?
Not really.
Good. Just the Middle Ages. All right. While we try to figure out John here in a second, what did you make of James Harrison's comments yesterday that Mike Tomlin gave him an envelope after he hit Muhammad Massaquoi, got fined $75,000 because it created a whole bunch of stir, in particular in New Orleans with Sean Payton?
Well, I think people react to that because you automatically assume that he's talking about an envelope for money for the hit. I've never known in all of my years of playing professional sports and being around great defensive coaches, being around Mike Tomlin, who was our secondary coach at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers under Lovie Smith, under Tony Dungy, under Monty Kiffin, have a relationship with Mike Tomlin today. I've never known him to be that type of coach with that type of dirtiness. I just never known him to do those sort of things. There is things that are said in all walks of life, whether it's in politics or sports or whatever, there's a certain few of people when you talk about Dungy's, Lovey's, the late Denny Green's, the Mike Tomlin's, they all are black head coaches that have was given opportunity to be successful and showed they could be successful as black head coaches. I can't. And I will not sit there and say that this dude, Mike Tomlin, gave him an envelope of money to hurt a player when I know that Mike Tomlin has been taught by Dungy, followed the Herm Edwards of the world, and all of these type of men that you only get one shot and one chance to make right. You can't screw it up like other people. Other people get an opportunity to screw it up and get second and third chances. These dudes can't screw it up. So it's hard for me to say that this dude would take that chance against the Cleveland Browns, first and foremost, to knock a player out. I can't, no.
Here's what he said, Key. James Harrison said on the Barstool podcast, the G-est thing Mike Tomlin ever did, he handed me an envelope after that. I'm not going to say what, but he handed me an envelope after that. Why is James Harrison telling this story now? Because James Harrison is, we all know who James Harrison is. We know the reputation that he has, and it seems that he has it bad for the Steelers. Is he just trying to start a fire in their backyard?
Well, not only does he have it bad for the Steelers, he's not a Roger Goodell guy. He's not a commissioner guy. So I'm sure he wants them to run around chasing their own tail in circles. And because he does have it out for the Steelers a little bit because of how they treated him in the end, or at least how he felt they treated him in the end when they certainly gave him his career as an undrafted guy after being released multiple times and finally becoming, you know, this dominant player in force. So maybe he does have it out for the NFL and has it out for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But I can't sit here and say that he was talking about money and Mike Tomlin gave him money. Maybe it was the envelope that the league sent for the fine and he just didn't say. He left it open-ended.
Why would that be the G-est thing he ever did? Just handing him an envelope with a letter in it.
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know why he would say that and use those words.
You think the NFL is going to try to run this down? Because Sean Payton, when he was talking about it, Sean Payton was asked about this, and we all know the Bounty Gate situation in New Orleans. Sean Payton lost $6 million being suspended 1 year, and he basically said, look, the NFL is not going to do this. The NFL has no interest in running this down. They came after us for reasons that I still don't understand. They're not going to do anything. Does Roger Goodell have to take this seriously?
He'll look into it. He'll look into it. Coach.
That's different than taking it seriously, though.
Yeah, because the problem that you had with the New Orleans Saints is it was the public perception. It was the players that said, yeah, we talked about it, and these are the things that's going on and what's happening. It's one dude versus multiple guys in New Orleans that was speaking about it, where – you only got James Harrison, who already has already taken up issue with the Pittsburgh Steelers and the NFL. So the NFL might just look at it as a, here we go with James. He's, you know, here we go. Here's a guy who's posting videos of bench pressing 900 pounds. You know, that's how they're going to look at it.
He put Mike Tomlin in an awfully bad spot. I mean, Mike Tomlin, because this, I don't know if this sticks as much to the Steelers as it does to Mike Tomlin.
I can promise you right now, Mike Tomlin gonna burn him up when they asked him. Mike Tomlin gonna set a torch to him.
What's he gonna say?
He gonna be like, he gonna say something real negative. Watch, like I don't know what he gonna say, but it's gonna be like me and LZ gonna be like, damn. LZ gonna be texting me like, you heard what Mike T said? Damn, because he gonna you know how Mike T gonna, you know his press conferences, he gonna gut him. Watch, he gonna say, oh man, he probably say something like, oh James, just James, maybe it's. He just mad because he ain't playing no more. He gonna say something that's gonna make people go, ooh, wait a minute. That's what's gonna happen.
It's something's gotta happen. There's no way that this thing just dies on the vine. Somebody's gotta follow up, whether it's Tomlin, the league, or somebody, because that's a pretty serious accusation that he paid his fine. And that, I don't know what else the envelope might represent other than he was going to pay that fine. Take It or Shake It is coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Okay, Key, let's start with the NFL. We'll continue the conversation we were just having.
No, let's take it, let's take it or shake it that George Sedano kidnapped Ireland.
Well, take it or shake it. Sedano's gagged Ireland.
Go ahead, child.
All right. NFL coaches pay players fines. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
Never?
Shake it. Oh, stop
never,
it. Come
I've
on.
I've never seen an NFL coach pay a player's fine. I've never – first of all, a player makes more money than a coach. Why would the coach pay his fine?
Just because he did some dirty work that needed to get done, and I'll take care of the backlash.
I've never known a coach to tell a player to do dirty work. I've known coaches to say, if you tackle him inside the 10 on kickoff, this pot of money goes to you. Whoever causes a fumble on kickoff or punt return, this money from the team that everybody pitched in, $100 a player in that particular pot, you know, goes to you. I've known them to say who gets an interception goes to you.
Let's call it what it is. There's never been a quote unquote incentive to do something physically detrimental to the other guy. Outside of football.
I've never seen that. I've never been on a team where I've heard a coach say to a player, if you physically hurt this dude, I got something for you. I've never heard it at all. I've heard coaches say you need to knock his ass out. I've heard those sort of things, but I've never heard do it for money.
All right, let's go to the next one here. Peyton Manning was in to talk to the Rams. He was one of their guest speakers. There is not a single football player that you would want to hear of as an active player, Key. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
I had a feeling.
I had a feeling.
Nobody? Take it. Not even Jerry Rice or anybody else.
I don't need – come on, man. What do I need to listen to them for?
I don't know. He's pretty good. Maybe it'll give you a little insight.
Doesn't help me.
Why not?
Doesn't help me. Because I don't – I know what that is. I know what those guys – I just – you're asking me when I've been there and done it, it's hard. Now, if you said to me, who would you want to listen to, I'd tell you Barack Obama. I wish I had the opportunity to see Dr. King and be a part of that and listen to that. I'd like to, you know, be able to sit down. As crazy as it may sound, I'd like to be able to just sit across from Donald Trump and just talk to him one-on-one. I just want to talk to you.
So it's not a pep, just to have it's not a conversation. The pep talk that you don't want. You don't want it from another athlete. You've got that covered.
Yeah, I mean, some people get, you know, coaches like stuff like that. When we've had guys come in and talk to our teams, I'm like, you know, I remember Roy Jones Jr. came and spoke to us. I was like, okay. I mean, I could talk to Roy at the club. I don't, you know.
Probably a different conversation. Probably talking about different stuff.
No, but I could stand next to Peyton Manning at the DirecTV suite at the Super Bowl and have a conversation. So it's not. It's not something that I would look forward to. There's others. There's young guys. There's people. And I also was brought up in football different than some of these other guys. Like, I didn't look at Jerry Rice and go, oh, man, that's Jerry Rice. I just wasn't built like that. I wasn't – it's like, oh, that's Jerry. Okay, he nice.
Key.
And I kept it moving.
Flip it the other way. If somebody said to you, hey, Key, we'd like to bring you in and talk to our guys, would you have interest in doing that? Would you have interest in being the other guy?
I do it all the time when they ask me, but that's because they're interested in what I got to say. I'm not interested in what the other players have got to say. There's a difference there. I'm asked to do it because they're interested in me. I'm not going to them and saying, hey, can I speak to your team? No, I'm not asking to do that. They're asking me.
All right, here's a little bit of an update. John Ireland at 8:30, so that's coming up about 45 minutes from right now.
The gag order has been lifted.
That's right. He's been allowed to talk about Fight Island, so that's coming up at 8:30. Let's take a listen to Blake Snell. He went on his Twitch account and was talking about why he needs his money to go back and play Major League Baseball.
I'm just saying, man, it just doesn't make sense for me to lose all of that money and then go play and then be on lockdown. Not around my family, not around the people I love, and get paid way the hell less, And then the risk of injury runs every time I step on the field. It's just, it's not worth it. It's not. I love baseball to death. It's just not worth it.
Blake Snell is making an argument that they simply cannot sell publicly. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
All right. Took you a while. Took you a while. Okay.
Yeah, because they're going to try to sell it to the public. And I don't think that it's going to go over well because he's already – people already jumped on him. So it's hard now to back up from that. Then Bryce Harper didn't help by
I was going to say, did it not help? Because at least Bryce Harper is like a megastar. Maybe he gives it a little bit.
It didn't help.
Blake Snell's a great pitcher, but nobody knows who he is.
It didn't help. You just got $26 million, man. You got $300-something million. That's 35 million people. That's without jobs and counting. So it's not going to help. It's just not going to help. The only thing that's going to help is go away. Just be quiet. Don't say anything. Just get your deal done.
Whatever make the argument about safety. Make the look safe, if you don't want to play. Make it about safety.
But oh, okay, yeah. Make it about safety because I'm gonna say they're not gonna put them in the field and out there if it ain't safe. Well, they're not gonna do that.
That's a secondary discussion. We can have that discussion. But if you make it about safety, I think people will be more willing to listen to that than.
Money. But you do know it's too late. They could have stayed with Kershaw.
Sure.
They could have stayed with what Kershaw said, and it would have been fine. But when you start talking about money. It's hard to talk about money when people losing jobs and people on furloughs and people taking pay cuts. And it's hard when they coming to you and telling this person, man, you got to take a pay cut and you got to do this. And it's hard.
All right, let's do this one. A Scarface reboot is in the works. It's going to be. Okay, you do not want to see it. Shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it, right?
Shake it, shake it, shake it. I didn't even say shake
man,
it.
We ain't even gonna come on.
Because Scarface, you could put in Scarface right now for the younger generation. Let's say that my kids have never seen Scarface 10 years from now. I put it in. They going to watch it.
Pelican, play. Come on, Pelican.
They don't need to see Jamie Foxx try to play somebody or I don't know, one of them actors. Who they trying to talk about playing?
They don't have any of the casting. They don't have Tony Montana cast, at least from what I can see. The Coen brothers wrote the script. Luca Guadagnino is going to be the director. But I don't know. I think you want to stay as far away from that movie as possible.
I'm now in. I didn't realize the Coen brothers were writing the script. Now I'm in. Now I'm interested. Because
I'm not interested. They're not going to remake The Godfather.
They're excellent. Their vision, their ability of turn of phrase, just the way they paint scenes. If the Coen brothers are writing it, now I'm interested to see how this is going to play out.
Do you need a new take on Scarface?
Shout out to my little friend!
So, LZ, when has one of these iconic movies like this had a reboot and it was, like, good and successful?
When's the last time a movie like this? What do you mean by a movie like this?
Like a Scarface, the actor Al Pacino era of drug trade, all of that sort of stuff fit right what they was doing.
I will put it this way: we know of several franchises that, when the right people get a hold of it, can flip it and make it excellent. And I can give you three or four examples off the top of my head right now. Number one, Mission Impossible. When they got the right people to get a hold of it and flip it, it became an excellent franchise. 007, mm-hmm. James Bond's. When they got the right people in place, it went from being,
very action-oriented. Exactly. This is such an iconic character with such an iconic story. Are you telling a different Tony Montana story?
I thought James Bond was iconic. My bad.
He is iconic, Elsie, but the movies are all the same. The movies are all the same. He gets the woman, he solves the crime, he saves the world. They're doing
action, and they're going Bond 1 year, Bond 2 the next, Bond 007 the third. This is like Scarface.
It went from when you get the right people, you can still have excellence even in a reboot. Look at the freaking reboot they did for like all of the Spider-Man movies. Batman went from being Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson.
But those aren't really. But to me, those aren't reboots. Those are like sequels.
You thought it was a wrap. And then the right people got a hold of it, and Heath Ledger wins an Oscar. Like, yeah, if you get the right people involved, you can flip it, and you can make Scarface great. You tell me the Coen brothers are involved, now I'm going to listen, because I know they're fantastic.
Yeah, I'll pass on it. Don't do it. I don't care if the Coen brothers, the Barbarian brothers.
You didn't see No Country for Old Men. I don't care who's doing it. If you didn't see No Country for Old Men and don't think that the Coen brothers can make Scarface excellent, then I don't know what to tell you.
That's one of my favorite films, LZ, of all time.
Ross, he doesn't know what he's talking about. No Country for Old Men.
Hey, you don't know what you're talking about. Hey, I know what I'm talking about. I don't want to see it. That's what I'm talking about.
Scarface? Come on, man, stop.
I want to make sure that everybody just said that Key doesn't care if it's the Coen brothers or the Barbarian brothers making it, because that is absolutely incredible. Well done, Key. David Falk joins us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.